Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Cal. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out. See it all together if you're with me now.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And we're going to be talking about a whole bunch of different stuff. And I don't know, we might spoil something, so I guess.
So why don't we just like head it off like right at the pass, because like we had at the end of the show last week, we were saying that we weren't going to have a show, and now we have a fucking show, and I'm here. So I was intending, like, you know, as we said, I was going to Fantastic Fest with our fellow writer from our Film Dispenser days and friend, Scott Phillips. And, you know, just to be safe, I took a PCR test with the full well knowledge that I wasn't going to have COVID, because I had had two previous PCR tests week after week after I had had COVID. And guess what, guys? I have fucking COVID. So
for the second time in like a month, you have COVID.
Yes. So going from 2.5 years of not catching this fucking thing to going and catching it, not once, but deuces. Like, it's kind of an experience. So, you know what? Nerds don't ruin everything sometimes. Coronavirus. Fucking COVID ruins everything. But the only side effect of this is that I was able to get everything sorted out. Like, Fantastic Fest is just an amazing, like just a firm in general. I don't know what else to call them. But, like, a festival in general. So I got everything sorted out. Plane flight, of course, got refunded. The only thing that really is shitty is that I'm not going to be able to cover everything. Like, asterisk on there. I have access to the press streaming site, which has a lot of great stuff. And then also, I'm going to individual PR reps because I did make a commitment to Fantastic Fest, and they said that I could cover streaming and anything that I got from vendors or from PR reps. This is a little behind the scenes so that you guys understand. Next week, I'll probably be talking about some stuff that I saw from coming out of Fantastic Fest, because I've already gotten like 4 screeners, and the streaming site has like 8 or 9 different 8 or 9 different films there. So I'm going to have a Fantastic Fest. It's just going to be at home, which is really shitty, because like the big stuff I'm not going to be able to see. So with that, now you guys know.
Yeah. I hate it, man, because like that of all of them, Fantastic Fest seems like the one, like that's the one I would want to go to. Like, yes. You know, everybody talks about Sundance and Toronto International Film Festival, or you know, or even Cannes. I don't, it all looks exciting, but then like Fantastic Fest feels like that's the one I would want to go to, man. You know?
Yeah. Well, it's like, it's made for, it's like the TIFF or Cannes or Sundance of genre festivals, right? Like it's the thing where everything coalesces for us. I mean, it's not just like they had Scripts Gone Wild there. They have like this thing called the Fantastic Debates. They have a whole bunch of podcasts that are going to be doing live cast things.
Yeah.
And, like, it's just, it's really, it's more than like, as you know, and maybe some of our readers do already know, but some of them that don't, it's like a really big deal to go to this thing, especially as a geek or a nerd, especially if your focus is film and genre films. It just kind of like most of the stuff that happens in the first half of, or the last half of 2020, like, you know, the last half of the year and the first like 4 or 5 months of the following year are usually things that happened at Fantastic Fest in September. Every, like, the thing that's, like, okay, so, like, here's the thing. I'm really into M. Night Shyamalan. Like, his second half career, like, after all the bullshit and the rebuild of himself, there's rumors that he's gonna, his newest film, A Knock at the Cabin Door, is gonna be premiering there, because every film since is it Switch? Which what's the one that McAvoy is in? The one that's the sequel to
Split.
Split. Yeah, Split. Since Split has premiered, every single film or something has that Knight has done has premiered there. So this new one's going to premiere there, like just as an example. And Sight Unseen, it's like the trailer just came out yesterday. So it's like I'm going to miss out on that, and that's the shittiest part is that I'm going to miss out on like seeing everything that's going to be like, you know, like something that I've been building up for like 18 years. Like, I mean, it's been around for 18 years. I mean, we've even had Spencer went, like, that's how Scott started going because Spencer went once and then, you know, like, you know, our friend Spencer started making a family. And so like, there was little time to fool around anymore and go to things like Fantastic Fest. But like Scott started going, and it's like, when you have friends go, it builds it up, right? Because they tell you about all this crazy crap that happens or the things that they see, and you're like, oh shit, I really want to go. So yeah, it's all to say that it's more than kind of disappointing. It's like, like I said, COVID ruins everything. But I'm going to try to make the most of it. And what I have, I mean, is more than I had last year and more than most people have that look at Fantastic Fest from that glass. I often think about it like it's the beginning of A Christmas Story. Like, I often think of, like, where Ralphie is at the department store. I mean, and we've all done that, where we've just looked from the glass of the glass, you know, from the glass, from the glass at the display counter and seeing whatever thing that we want. And I mean, you know, whatever our Red Ryder BB gun is, you know, it's just there. So, but with that, let's turn to other things. Let's go ahead and, like, I mean, unless you have questions for me, I figure that would be a good time to talk a little bit about news. Maybe if there's anything out there, I didn't really. Oh, go ahead.
I haven't watched the trailer, but I thought maybe you had Inuyuritu, or
yes, Bardo.
Has a new movie coming out, the Bardo.
Yes,
I haven't watched the trailer. I don't think I know I saw Birdman, and I really enjoyed it for what it was. You know, weird, strange. I don't think I've seen anything since Birdman, so I don't.
You didn't see Revenant? You didn't see the Revenant? Oh, okay. That was his only other film. I think that one, the hype lives up to the movie. But I did watch the trailer for Bardo, or what's called, like, I always, like, you know, Birdman's not just called Birdman, right? It's like Birdman, the folly of whatever. This one's fucking called Bardo, False Chronicle of a Handful of Truths. 3 fucking hours. This thing looks fucking wild, dude. It's all set to a weird, like, all I can say is it's kind of like this weird, it seems like Peter Gabriel version of the Eggman. I am the Walrus.
Okay.
And literally it looks like all of the tricks that he's, or all of the cinematic like tricks and tomfoolery. And I say that with knowing like Inuyuritu is somebody that like, he's a guy that I may not watch his films all the time, but man, these things fucking connect, like these fucking things are amazing. It looks like all of the things that he's been fooling around with like single camera takes and like extensions of that stuff has come together in this, it's coalesced in this weird internal thing about a filmmaker and his striving for something, but it's done in this really fantastical Fellini-esque way. It's a wild trailer. Like, I sat there and watched it and I was like, okay, you can't watch this like fucking Netflix. You can't watch this on Netflix. You have to watch this in the theater because it looks big, loud, sustained, and it's something that you're going to instantly turn off after 5 minutes if you get annoyed with it. Where sometimes like I don't know about you, but like there's sometimes about the theater experience where I'm trapped into something and I get annoyed with something where, oh man, I paid $20 for this, or I paid $10 for this. I ain't gonna fucking leave. I'm gonna have to watch this. And it turns on you, and it feels like that's the kind of movie it is. And especially with a Rotten Tomato score of like literally 50%, that means that 50% people liked it and 50% of the people hated it. And I'm just like, that's the kind of movie that intrigues me. Right? Like, something that either it's literally cut down the middle. You either love or hate. So yeah, I'm intrigued. Like, literally, I'm very intrigued.
See, I fall on the other side of, like, with that runtime, I'm like, okay, it's on Netflix. So when I do watch it, I'm able to, like, watch an hour of it, take a break, like, maybe go for a walk, get a snack, use the bathroom, come back. You know, watch another hour, you know, and kind of do it like that. I mean, the theatrical experience, you know, is probably best, but I don't know. Speaking of COVID ruining things, I think COVID officially killed my interest in theatrical experiences because I didn't go for almost 2 years. So,
yeah.
Like, when I went back and I was like, oh, God, this sucks, man. Like, the people here just ruined, like, nobody, you know, they're back out of their houses. So it's just even more talking, more using cell phones, more, like, the theaters don't have enough staff, you know.
Yeah.
So you have to get there way early because you got to wait in long. I don't know how it is there, but, like, here, no theater has a ticket line and a concession stand line. So,
Wow.
You're waiting in the same, if you're buying your tickets on site, you're waiting in the same line for concessions. If you pre-buy your tickets, you still got to wait in line with everybody else to buy tickets and concessions. And so there's no, and we've got three local theaters. I've taken to go into one that's older and pretty run down. It used to be the discount theater where they would have like $2.50 movies, you know, second run. Oh, stuff.
Okay. Yeah.
And when they got bought out by AMC, AMC just turned it into a regular theater with first run movies, but at a discounted price. So the seats are old and creaky and not very comfortable, but you go and they only ever have like two people in there, but there's nobody going there. Like it's never busy. So,
oh wow. Like,
I saw Jurassic World there, which that movie's a mess, but and it was a better experience. Even though it was uncomfortable for 2.5 hours sitting in that seat, but like I didn't have to deal with any of the regular nonsense of going to the bigger multiplex closer. That's actually closer. But anyway, I turned it into a diatribe about how much I've not enjoyed going to the movies the last year and a half. But
yeah. Hey, you know what? If the theatrical, well, I mean, you know, like let's talk about this because this is news because Regal Cinema, one of the biggest theater chains in the world, filed bankruptcy and this is the reason why. If you don't give people good experiences and it's a shitty experience, people are not going to churn up. And the whole thing is that it's like, here's the problem is like, what I don't get is that people have been staying inside their fucking houses, looking on their phone, inactively watching shit. I mean, shit, sometimes I do that. Sometimes there's just things that you just put on the background just to have noise on. Not all the time. Like, we're going to talk about a couple of things that I watched at home that are, like, I definitely watched, and I watched them. But it's, like, to spend the money to do that in a theater, I don't get.
Yeah.
Like, stay the fuck home. Don't ruin the experience for other people that hold it in higher regard than you. And the fact that, like, you know,
and it's Regal not AMC, cheap, man. It's not like you're paying $5 to go see something. I went to go see, when I went to go see Clerks 3, Which actually I did have a good experience, but it was a special screening.
Yes.
So it was a little bit different. I mean, I paid $20 almost for that ticket.
See,
you know?
There you go, right
and,
there.
And I didn't mind, but I don't want to pay $20 to go see something like completely inconsequential. I don't know, like one of the Minions movies or something, only to have the dude behind me like talking to his girlfriend explaining the movie the whole time or something.
Oh,
or the
Christ.
Person in front of me like checking their phone every 5 minutes, and not just checking their phone, but not even smart enough to like turn the fucking brightness down on your phone so that at least when you pull it out of your pocket, it's not like a giant spotlight on your face, you know? Like, it's unbelievable how much money people spend to just not even try to enjoy watching the movie. If you're not liking the movie, get up, leave, and go get your money back. Like,
absolutely. Absolutely. Like, what the fuck is your problem? Like, or if you're so bored by it, why did you even come?
Yeah.
Like that's the thing. It's like, why did you even try to do this? Like, that's what I don't understand, is this whole thing of like, I mean, it's like, I'm just like, you know, I'd rather have people just stay home and it be an empty theater experience and it just slowly dwindle away, than to deal with this kind of bullshit. Because it's like, okay, fine. Like, you want to spend your money on $20 on something, then fine, do it. But you know what? Do it at your home. Wait a couple of weeks. Or, I mean, like, literally, we're in a time right now where, like, oh, you missed Thor Ragnarok? Don't worry. Like, in 2 months, it's literally going to be on Disney Plus where you can watch it. But here's the best part about it. You can watch it in regular format, or you can watch it in the fucking IMAX enhanced version.
Yeah.
So literally you're getting the theatrical fucking experience. Stay the fuck home. Like, that's my thought, is stay the fuck home. Like, don't go out. Like, save us all the trouble, because there's a lot of people that do revere the theatrical experience because it's bigger. You're locked into something, so you have to sit there and watch it. Don't sit there and like, I just love how everybody has their precious little fucking bubble and don't understand, oh, well, I'm just going to check this, not understanding that somebody could be concentrating on something and then a flash of light comes up. Like not everybody wants to see your fucking, like, wants to see your fucking TikTok fucking bullshit. I'm sorry. Maybe I'm an old man and, you know, like, there with my garden gnomes sitting on my lawn, get off my lawn. I don't give a shit. Like, you don't, like, if you're in that much of a bubble, just stay out of, like, things that require concentration. You know, obviously you're off the ADHD meds, or your anxiety is so bad that your little squeezy, your self-medication is your fucking phone that forces you to go on there and check what your fucking friends are saying. I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to tell every person that does that, who's listening right now, that's ashamed, that checks their fucking phone while they're watching, you know, Idris Elba in Beast in IMAX. I'm going to tell you something. Nothing that you fucking have on your phone is better than Idris Elba on screen fighting fucking lions. I can tell you that right fucking now. Nothing that your fucking shitty friends and your the shitty dude that you're trying to text that's ghosting you, nothing he says is going to be better than what's on screen with Idris Elba, the man who should have been James Bond before Daniel Craig. Like, fighting lions. I'm just going to tell you that. It's just not going to happen. There's nothing on your fucking phone unless somebody tells you you just inherited $1 billion. But you know what? I'm fairly certain if you're listening to us, you're in a region that there ain't no way that you have any kind of uncle or auntie that's going to leave you $1 billion. I can tell you that right now. So believe this. Your Uncle Adam, Uncle Adam is telling you, stay off your fucking phones.
I think I've had one truly, well, no, that's not true. Top Gun was a really good theatrical experience.
Yes, I saw it was.
In the IMAX. Well, it's not a true IMAX, but I saw it in IMAX and went with my buddy Sean, and like just had a really good time watching that movie. Clerks 3 was a great experience, but it was just emotional and I went by myself. Everything Everywhere All at Once was a great theatrical experience. I went with a friend of mine and we both, like, she's a mother. And so, like, we expected it to just be like a fun, kind of funny action movie. And neither one of us expected to just be like laughing and crying from emotion, like at the same time. It's easily, I think, the best movie of the year. I say that having only seen like 10 movies, but God, I can't imagine anything was better than Everything Everywhere All at Once.
I've seen close to 200 movies and nothing has come close. Like, yeah. I'll tell you that. Like there's nothing that's like, as soon as it came out and as soon as I saw it, it's remained the top. And I honestly do not see how it's going to take something really big and bold to take that away, because I can definitely tell you that I've not seen anything that's come close. There's a lot of things vying for second place. But this is not like, you know, yeah. But yeah, theatricals, those, and also like me seeing Nope in IMAX, like in a true IMAX, like was an experience and a half.
Went and saw Nope in the IMAX. I regret that I didn't.
It's like I'm gonna be interested in seeing how that translates into, because his other two films have been like, they easily transferred to the small screen because they didn't have super big visuals, but this is something where he's working on a huge canvas, and I'm very curious to see, because of like the canvas was what made a lot of, like, his use of space made it so effective. I'm truly wondering how it's going to play on the small screen. Like, I mean, we say this when we have like screens, that are probably more advanced than the movie theaters we went to go see movies in when we were kids.
I was in Walmart the other day. Uh-huh. I had to go buy a new microwave.
That's an adult problem if I've ever heard one.
Yeah, ours started throwing off sparks, so I was like, well, yeah. And we had a very, very cheap, like, $50, you know, tiny microwave. It sucked, man. Yeah, you could not pop popcorn in that thing. It was not powerful enough.
Oh, shit.
So I was like, well, okay, this one sucked anyway, so I'm gonna go buy a new microwave. I haven't gotten to use it yet, but I found one it's a microwave, convection oven, air fryer combo. Oh,
shit.
Yeah,
it was
marked down from $200 to $100, and I was like, I'm gonna buy this. It at least has to work as a microwave. We'll see how it does with everything else. Anyway, so I throw it in the cart and I'm walking by. I always go to the entertainment section just to see. That's my local Walmart keeps like really like geeky like toys and statues and stuff in the section with the movies. So okay. They always have like a big display of like TVs in front. And I mean, oh my God, man. Every time I go, I'm like, TVs have gotten so cheap, but like Walmart's doing this thing right now where they're marking holiday prices. They're going into their Black Friday sale.
Black Friday.
Yeah. Yep. Two months early to help, quote, fight the recession. I don't know why buying a new TV is going to help you fight the recession. But anyway, it was a 75-inch TV probably. It's a big TV. And it was like $490. And I was like, I paid $1,500 for my first flat screen TV. It was $1,200. My first flat panel, not flat screen, but flat panel TV. It was 32 inches. And like, I paid $1,200 for it. And it was a while ago, but it wasn't that long ago, you know? It was, you know, I am blown away by how cheap TVs are. Now, granted, it's not, you know, 8K, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, a giant flat panel or flat screen smart TV for $500.
Like, $500.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's, you know, get yourself a half decent surround sound system. I mean, you could have a decent, like, personal theater in your living room for, I mean, less than $2,000. You know?
Yes.
It's crazy.
And not just, yeah, and not just like a, not just like a halfway thing, like you could have a Dolby Atmos, like, yeah, with speakers overhead and an 85-inch, like, you know, 85-inch, like, 4K with all the bells and whistles for $2,000. Like, you could have your own home personal theater for that. And that's a wild thing to think that, you know, that we're at that point. Like, you know, that the tech is cheaper than anything else. And here's the thing is that this is why, you know, theater chains are losing the battle is that the presentation on your 4K, I can guarantee you, is brighter and better than 90% mm-hmm. of the theaters, because they just don't care and they can't afford new bulbs. And it's just it's a whole situation that's just.
It's a weird problem where it's like, it's, you want to blame the theaters because they've spent so many years not really investing in the actual experience, because people,
yep,
piling in to go see these big superhero movies. So, like, fuck it, you know, like, they're coming in, it doesn't matter, you know, if they have a bad experience. But, you know, the flip side, to take the point of view of the theaters, like, I was explaining this to a friend of mine. We were talking mm-hmm. about it, and we were talking about Top Gun, actually, and he was talking about, like, I can't believe, like, it's still doing this and this kind of money in the theater. And I said, yeah, it's really good for the theater chains. And you know, I said, it's probably one of the few things that they're actually happy about in the last 2 years. And he said, why is it good for them? Like, what does it matter? I was like, oh, well. And I explained to him, like, the breakdown. I'm like, a lot of people don't really know. Like, when a movie opens, like, it's not even a 50-50 split for a big movie like that. I imagine it was more like a 70-30 split. Like, Paramount, for the first week or 2 weeks, probably gets 70% of the money that movie is making. The theater only gets 30%. But as the movie goes on, that balance sort of flips, which is part of the reason you've seen the death of that long theater run, is because studios don't give a shit. Like, they're losing, if it stays in the theater for 6 months, they're losing 70%, you know? Or at the very least, or 50%, you know, sometimes more. So, you know, that, after 3 months, they do not care, because it does not really benefit them much at all to keep a movie in theaters for more than a couple of months. And he was like, well, that seems like a really, like, bum, shitty deal for theaters. I'm like, yeah, but the flip side of that is you have to make that deal or you don't get to run those movies. So, like, you know, it is a thing that everybody is complicit in. I remember talking to Spencer at the start of the pandemic, and he was like, man, the theaters, like, they're just gonna die off. And my response was, good. Like, you know, I don't think anybody should be out of a job. I think it would be for the better. Like, we don't, my city does not need 3 multiplexes. It doesn't. Like, there was never enough people here to support 3 multiplexes. You know, especially 3 multiplexes that are all showing the same 4 movies.
Yeah. Like, same four boring ass movies. Like, I'm sorry, but like, yeah, it's
so
they got overzealous. They got overzealous. Like the comic book movies. Like, I mean, like or just like Marvel releases in general made everybody rabid, and then you add in sometimes the DCU worked. And I mean, you know, and people think that this is just like, you know, like people that don't track this stuff, they're like, oh, no, you know, that's not true. No, it is. Like, it just, everybody saw green. And when every movie that's being released that has a comic book, like has superhero themes in it or is based off of an existing property is making $1 billion. Yeah, you know, everybody gets greedy, and like AMC, Regal, and Cinemark, or whoever else there is, all look and go, oh, well, Columbus, you know what? We could fight AMC, or we could fight Regal. And it's just like, that's how you end up with three fucking theaters, is because they all get greedy and go, you know, there's a certain amount of population, and there's only so many theaters in so many runtimes. But it's like, the good times have to end at a certain point, and pandemic definitely showed that. Is that you got overzealous?
And I mean, at some point, somebody has to, like, these auteur directors, the demanding a theatrical experience, which I fully support. And my whole, like, good, let the theater experience die isn't because I want there to never be a theater experience. It's because something has to change. And it is not changing. Like, the theaters aren't staffing enough because they're not making enough money, because they're making bad deals with these movie houses. It's just all terrible. And until somebody stands up and says, hey, you know, like, no, you can't take 70% of our profits. I know it's your movie, but like, we're paying for, you know, they're paying for the bulbs, they're paying for the equipment, they're paying for the labor, they're paying like all of that stuff, you know, which is why Cokes and popcorn and candy are so expensive at the theater.
Expensive. It's what are they covering? It's like, I saw a meme recently, you probably have seen it, where it says a bottle of water costs 50 cents at the grocery store, $5 at the movie theater, and $12 at the airport. But that's like literally what it is. Like, I don't, like, you know, I don't buy concessions anymore from the theater just because I'm getting gouged. I know I'm getting gouged, and I refuse to get gouged anymore. I just don't. Like, I can sit in the theater. Like, part of the experience for me used to be popcorn, right? Mm-hmm. Like, popcorns and Reese's Pieces. Since I saw E.T. in the theater.
Oh, my God. We're brothers, man. That is my, if I just say, don't have Reese's Pieces, I will grab a bunch of Crunch.
Yes.
It's a pretty good replacement. It's chocolate instead of peanut butter. But yes, warm, buttery popcorn with Reese's Pieces is fucking heaven.
Yes.
It is so good.
And it's something that I do at my house. Like, that's what I do. Like, big movies that, like, we watch on a Saturday night or a Friday night. Fucking A, I'm going to do that. Like, I have my own fucking supply of this shit, right? And, like, I will tell you, the best popcorn to get, like microwave, side tangent, microwave popcorn, my favorite so far after all the years of searching, Kirkland's Costco brand microwave movie popcorn.
See, I got there's not a Costco near me, so we'll have
How does Columbus have three fucking movie theaters and no Costco?
We've got one Sam's, and that keeps everything else at bay.
I see. You know what? When one of those theaters go under, because they're so fucking gigantic, do not
turn
be surprised.
Turn it into a Costco.
Costco, exactly. You know? But they make this giant-ass, like, it's a 60, like, of course, like, everything's fucking big at Costco, right? It's 60 contain, it's a container of 60 individually wrapped movie popcorns, and I will tell you, their movie popcorn is, like, their popcorn is better than any of the other microwave popcorns I've tried. So, like, that with a couple of packs of mini Reese's Pieces, I'm fucking set for the Saturday night. And it's like, I don't, for me personally, it's like, it's one of those weird things where it's like, that's a part of the theatrical experience, but, like, it costs, like, you and another person going to see a movie becomes as expensive as if you were going to see a Broadway show, it seems sometimes. Yeah. Like, you get out of there, and it's $100 just at the theater, because two individual drinks, popcorn, candy that you and your other person want that's different than each other, maybe some nachos to flavor it up, all that shit, plus the two tickets, you're ending up at like $90. It's ridiculous. I've always had this dream of opening up like a second run house, but literally making it like making the concession stand like Costco brand, like instead of them waiting for popcorn, I have a bunch of microwaves, and popcorn is 50 cents. And what you get is a bag of popcorn.
Yep.
You get the bag of popcorn, and I give you the container that you can put it in. You go over to the microwave, just like the self-serve drinks that all these fucking places have, right?
Yep.
Like they all have the self-serve drinks, right? Cans. I would serve cans. I don't care if they're going to throw it at the screen, but I would find a way to serve things self-contained and charge them the minimum. And the only thing that matters is the movie. And even the movie, it's second run, who cares? You get to see the movie on the big screen. Even streaming stuff. Like, I would do Netflix, Hulu, so that, like, you know, in 3 weeks, if you really wanted to, you could step into my theater and go see Prey. Because you watched it on the small screen, and you're like, fuck, I want to see fucking Last of the Mohicans, Predator style in the fucking theater.
Yeah.
You go in. You know? But that's just a dream. and we've gone on this weird side tangent about theatrical, man. Like, this is what I love about our podcast, is that we just kind of start talking and it leads into these like interesting paths of like, you know, just like why theatrical is dying, you know?
Yeah. And hopefully something changes, you know, with the bankruptcy and just,
yeah,
you know, like, something's got to give at some point. And, you know, I don't think we'll ever see the true death of theatrical,
no,
at least not in our lifetime. But I am absolutely here and down for, like, you know, it failing, for it to reemerge as something truly better, you know,
like,
so even if it's that the same, like you were talking about seeing a Broadway play, even if it's that same like caliber of like, you're going to spend, you know, $100 anyway, but there's going to be an usher and there's going to be like somebody that's disturbing the experience will be called out and escorted out of the theater, you know, stuff like that. You know, if it's not for children will not be allowed in there. So,
yeah, you know, well, it's just like our, like, I don't know about your parents, but like my dad is very fond of talking to me about like, you know, theatrical before, like, you know, before chains came around. And like, he finally remembers, tells me about the times he saw like Lawrence of Arabia and Bridge Over the River Kwai, and how they were truly special experiences because, like, you know, they had intermissions and they were at the big, like they weren't even at the big like movie house. They were at the stage house, like the theater stage, like the actual Broadway, like the stage play house, because it was so, they did the road shows and it was important and you spent a lot of money and you had to respect it. And
you know, that's what Kevin Smith does now.
Yes.
Is like his movies are all just road shows. Like they have the special screenings for places that, you know, he's not really going to get to, but he does these rolling road shows. And his per screen average, you know, of course tickets are more expensive, but you know, you pay $50, you get to see the movie, you get to hear him talk possibly with some of the actors. for a good at least 2 hours, probably after the movie. You know, there's snacks, there's drinks, there's, you know, and you still wind up spending $100-$125, but you get a fucking experience that is not going to be ruined because some idiot's on their phone. Somebody might get on their phone, but like, it's going to be such a bigger, grander experience than like, yeah, I went to go see Top Gun, man, and the dude behind me would not stop telling his girlfriend about what happened in the first movie, and I just wanted to turn around and go, we all saw the first fucking movie, dude, shut up.
Yeah, so, or maybe you bring in the wrong girl to the theater if you have to explain this shit to her. Stop.
So, yeah.
And it's not like, like, here's the best part.
Look at her and be like, you're dating a douchebag, why are you letting him do this to you?
He's the Houston Astros dude from the meme. You know, the one that has the hat. He's like yelling at the girl and the girl's just like sitting there. Yeah. That's him. Like, any asshole that thinks that a fucking 35-year-old movie starring Tom Cruise about airplanes needs to fucking be discussed about the plot and how similar it is to, fuck you. Get the fuck out of here.
I cannot tell you how many movies I've gone to see and I've sat in front of that dude who is explaining the movie or something else to his date or whatever, the entire film. And I'm just like, why? I want to just ask her, why are you with this person? Like, that you can't be so stupid that you have to have this guy explain everything to you. So anyway, that's a whole other tangent. We should talk about things we're watching. So it is September, which means the seasons are changing. Kids are going back to school. And one of the only truly possibly good things that happens in September, besides football, is network TV starts their new seasons. It used to be, because Adam and I are old, it used to be the only, like, you had the fall premieres and then you had a couple of mid-season premieres. TV's year-round now, so it's a little, you know, streaming has destroyed that model. But there's still that network September premiere, like the Conners premiered this week. Abbott Elementary.
Yep.
They just won a bunch of Emmys, is back, and it was a solid, solid episode. A show also premiered not on network TV that Adam and I both watched. Well, two shows. We have not talked about Andor. I don't know if you've watched. Did you watch it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Watch it on Wednesday night with the full knowledge that I was going to Fantastic Fest and I needed to watch it because I didn't want spoilers. I would have watched it anyways. I mean, who are we fucking kidding? Three episodes, and thank God it was three episodes. I'll tell you that much. And it's not a bad, like, it's not a slight. Did we want to get into,
Well, let's talk about Andor first. Talk about reboot first.
Okay.
So Steve Levitan, the guy that gave us Modern Family, which is a great show that probably went on a little too long. I loved Modern Family. And so when I saw the preview for this, I was like, oh, this looks fun and interesting and not necessarily new, because there have been lots of shows about shows, but basically they're rebooting an old show, and this is a show about them rebooting this old 90s style sitcom.
Very step by step.
Yeah.
It's weird that Paul Reiser's it's not weird because we know the meta quality of it, but it's very My Two Dads.
Yeah.
With Paul Reiser. And Paul Reiser's in this fucking show. Playing the only kind of character that Paul Reiser can is perfect to play. But anyways, it's a very kind of 90s Perfect Strangers, My Two Dads. Like, if you watched it now, you'd go, what? Watched that shit?
The cast is so good. You got Keegan-Michael Key, Johnny Knoxville, Callum Worthy. Rachel Bloom, and Judy Greer, and Paul Reiser. And they are just, like, so good together. We got three episodes of this show too when it dropped, and I loved it, man. I thought it was so funny and such an interesting blend of like that old style. Like there's a big point of contention with Paul Reiser, and Paul Reiser's the creator of the original show, and his daughter, you find out it's his daughter, comes in to pitch to Hulu. Like Hulu's actually like they're taking digs at Hulu, which is a lot of fun. Comes in to pitch this like gritty reboot of the show. They buy into it. They get everything gets rolling, and then Paul Reiser comes back into it and is like, no, like we're not going to do an edgy version of the show. So it's this whole battle of like classic sitcom-y versus like edgy newer sitcom-y and like headbutting and like how to blend those two things together. And then the way the show does it, like in the, it's the third episode where they're in the writer's room, right? And it's this whole like, it's not funny if somebody trips and falls over things. Like that's just not inherently funny. And then like it, the whole fight ends with somebody tripping and falling over something to prove actually how funny that is.
It is. Yeah. I'll let you continue on and then we'll talk about it.
I think it's a really like self-referential kind of, it's interesting and fascinating and just extremely funny and smart how it's able to like talk about itself while creating the show, talking about current culture and how, you know, comedy is changing, but that doesn't mean that that the old stuff isn't also funny. Like, you know, I really, really, really enjoyed it. I'm excited for what it could mean for like future sitcom style shows on streaming. Mm-hmm. So yeah, what did you think?
I was not a big fan of it.
Okay.
Here's the short of it for me. Really love the cast, love what they're doing, but I'm not sure if this is for me. It's weird because it's like I'm not sure what I wanted from it, but I'm not sure if it's this that I want, like the insider baseball stuff. I like the chemistry and I like the actors, which is going to keep me rolling with this because I want to see where they're going to go with it. Right. And I always have to tell myself, and I take a step back and go, Modern Family wasn't what it was until the second or third season. Right. Like it evolved and changed and morphed with the characters as they evolved and changed and became the show that everybody loved, not like any good show, any show that has a good premise, a solid premise, and a great staple of actors usually takes about at least a season to get cooking. So ultimately, I love the cast. I mean, like to give Judy Greer the kind of platform that you're giving her to make her be able to do the silly stuff from the past, the really complex comedy right now, like that, like to me, ultimately, like, if you can get her and Rachel Bloom a little bit more screen time and Knoxville Colum and Keegan-Michael Key less, like, and I'm talking, like, less. Like, The thing that I don't find interesting is Knoxville, Keegan, and Colm. Like, I just don't
I would agree with that. I would agree with that. Their plot lines were for sure my least, like, all three of their plots basically boiled down to, over three episodes, something to do with sex. Like, all three of them. And that was a little, like, okay, yeah, like, there was nothing special there. Johnny Knoxville, I thought his best moments in the three episodes were his tags. Like, every time he just, like, popped up to, like, tag a joke or, you know, just, like, zing somebody, that was always funny. But, like, yes, the whole, like, you know, sleeping with his co-star's mom thing, it just, like, that was not inherently funny, you know?
No, it wasn't. Like, and to be perfectly honest, you know who I thought that they were going to have as his mom? Like, literally, I thought for a second, I was like, oh, shit, did they just do the Stifler's mom thing and get Jennifer Coolidge? Because I literally thought it was Jennifer Coolidge. I'm like, oh, come on. Can you not be a more obvious? And then, like, okay, I like what Reiser does. I totally do not fucking like the way that they write him and Rachel Bloom's relationship. It's like, could you be more fucking obvious? Like, literally, can you be more obvious? That's why I'm saying, like, what I find fascinating is the stuff, like, and I don't know if it's Judy Greer. Like, I'm a huge Judy Greer stan, right? Like, she's been amazing since the early 2000s, right?
Look, she's only in a handful of Arrested Development episodes.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Holy shit, man.
You're never going to see these in again? I'm like, oh, shit. Like, she's so funny. She is. She took a single joke about the cross-eyedness and the other stuff that's cross-eyed, and she turned it into an entire character. Like, when you think of, like, when I think about that shit, I'm like, that's fucking, that's an actress. Like, somebody that can take one thing and turn it into an entire character over five or six different episodes? Yes. Damn. But her and Bloom, like, and here's the weird part. Rachel Bloom, I didn't even recognize her.
So, like, I was going to ask you about that, too. Like, so were you a fan of 30 Rock?
Yes, I was. I'm a huge fan of 30 Rock, yeah.
I know a lot of people like 30 Rock, and then a lot of... I am in the camp of, like, 30 Rock is okay. Like,
I've seen
episodes where I was like, that's hysterical. And I've seen episodes where I'm like, this is just, like, on a level that... Like, I'm not understanding why it's funny. So, but they did, with Rachel Bloom, they did a very Liz Lemon, like, how can we make her look, like, schluppy?
Frumpy, yeah. Like, and it's the same problem I have with 30 Rock, which is, it's like, I was like, okay, so you can have, like, and this is, like, again, this is a problem that's 10 to 15 years old. You don't need to make, like, and here's the thing, Rachel Bloom, all you have to do is watch Crazy Ex-Girlfriend and realize that she's an amazing, gorgeous woman. I'm not trying to be anything other than to say, a TV writer doesn't need to be frumpy. Why the fuck are you doing this, Steve Levitan? This is, like, literally, you're doing
such a stereotype, yeah.
Exactly. Why can't Rachel Bloom be the beautiful woman that she already is, like, but still be like a little disorganized? And even then I'm like, you know what? Why does comedy have to revert? Like, and this is where, again, I'm having a problem with the show, which is like if you're going to do this whole thing of like, let's go ahead and go to the least common denominator, but try to be smart about it. I'm not going to stick around for this fucking show. If you keep on just making her frumpy and that's the joke, it's like, come on. Like you said, like 30 Rock, like, here's the difference between 30 Rock and Parks and Rec. 30 Rock never respected Liz Lemon. Never. But Parks and Rec always respected Leslie Knope. For everything that they were both very similar characters. And, you know, I mean, we know that they both worked at the news desk on SNL. And they went in very different directions. And I don't know what that says about Tina Fey, because she was the showrunner, and how she approached Liz Lemon, and And how, oh God, I can't even think of her name now. Oh Jesus, because I love her to death. The woman that played Leslie Knope. Good Lord. Oh, good grief. Amy Poehler. There we go. But the difference is that the show's show's respect for their characters or lack thereof is very different. And my problem is that it feels like Reboot doesn't have any respect for its female characters and has a little respect for its male characters. Though, like you said, the sex, it's like the least common denominator. And I'm hoping that it elevates itself. That's why I'm going to watch it for the next, like, you know, for the whole season. See if it elevates itself and starts here, but then goes, no. We're starting here because that's where the show starts, but we're going to change it over time. And like I said, like, there's a way to do things, and this is just not working for me. Like, there's a couple of different ways that you could approach this show. And again, it's just, I love the characters. I have nothing but respect for Levitan because the monster that is Modern Family. I mean, like, Jesus, that thing had all the ratings and all the Emmys, right? Like, I think every single person in that cast won an Emmy at one point during its run, with good reason. I mean, yeah. You know, hashtag Ed O'Neill, man. I fucking love that dude. So, like, I was going to ask, do you feel like the subtlety of Modern Family can be, like, is the crass subtlety of Modern Family? Like, I think that's the best way that I can describe it.
One thing is that it's on Hulu, not network TV. So yeah. I think at some point it does become, like, especially out of the gate, you're like, oh, we can do XYZ, like, we can swear, so there's, you know, we can make extremely crude jokes without having to like censor it or like rein anything in. Like, it doesn't have to be innuendo. Like, at one point a old woman actually says the word cunt in one of the episodes. Yes. So it's just like, that's something you could never come close to saying on network television. So I think he's having a little fun with being able to, like, get outside the boundaries. I think when you can do that, you might lose sight of some things, like, hence, like, the three very sex-heavy storylines. But I also think the show is I do think it's commenting about itself. Like, I agree that, like, it seems like such a cliche to have her look like such a frumpy, like, writer, you know, because we did see that in Liz Lemon, even though occasionally Liz was glammed up or whatever. But, like, she was always wearing, like, that oversized, like, baggy sweater and, you know, and the whole no respect thing. Like, but I think that's also the show commenting on the stereotype by using the stereotype. Maybe I'm giving it too much credit, but I think that's what we're seeing. We just haven't gotten to that part yet. I really enjoyed them tackling the whole, like, broad comedy versus, like, you know, more intelligent comedy, you know. And this is the same guy that was Larry Sanders.
Larry Sanders, yes.
So and Levitan comes from
that, the Larry, like, from that particular brand. I mean, he also was on Just Shoot Me, so he understands the.
Well, that's what I'm saying. He's got a very like good, healthy mix of, like, being able to do broad comedy and also kind of elevated. Just more, Yeah.
The elevated stuff. I mean, he was on Frasier for God knows how long. I can't remember. But I mean, when you think of like, when I think of elevated sitcoms from a different era that kind of remain good, Frasier's one of them. And like, and Larry Sanders.
I just did a rewatch of Frasier a month ago. I didn't like specifically rewatch every episode. Like I'll put on something I'm familiar with and fall asleep watching it or play video games while it's on. I did that with Frasier. I just started, what did I put on the other day? Oh, That 70s Show is on Peacock. So I've been watching That 70s Show. But yeah, Frasier is, man, talk about it. It's right there with Modern Family of like, just like that show that was a monster, man. But yeah, I see your complaints, and I think they're not. I don't think you're off base at all. I guess it just wasn't enough to completely ruin my experience with it.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, like,
I don't know what Keegan-Michael Key is doing though. Like, I other than like lampooning the whole like. Actor thing, you know, like
he's the producer, he's the executive producer, like he's one of the guys that like put this together and wanted to work with Levitan, from what I understand.
I mean, and he's that's the funny thing. And he's fine. It's just like it's specifically his comedy bits in the episode are extremely obvious, you know, like. The first episode, when we first see him, he's talking to his girlfriend in New York and telling her, like, who did he say? Somebody famous was having lunch in the restaurant with him, but not with him.
Oh, God. Yeah, but not with him. Oh, God. Who was it? I can't even remember. But yes.
And then he makes the joke, not the joke, he makes, says he was having lunch with that person. When he's back in LA, he's like, oh yeah, I just had lunch with so-and-so. And it's like, it's a pretty obvious joke, you know?
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing, but like, is the joke that he's that vapid? Like, is that just the joke? Like,
that's going to be like a one, like,
yeah, it's a difficult thing to pull off.
No, it's a very okay. So, like, here's the thing: is that so? Like, the last thing that I saw him in was Schmigadoon, and he, like, they purposely put him sidelined because Cicely Strong is so good in that show. But what he does in there, even in the first episode, is infinitely more interesting than what he's doing here. Let me just say, like, Schmigadoon is a show that's a musical, right? But he doesn't.
I wanted to watch it, and I haven't got around to it.
Yeah, no. It's
coming, good. Right?
Yes, it is. Yeah. And I won't ruin, like, I know, like, because it ties to the end. I'll just say, give it a chance. It's very interesting. It's very, like, especially if you're if somebody's a musical fan, and especially the Roger.
For musicals, so
okay, yeah. And if you're the person that likes the Rodgers and Hammerstein stuff,
oh yeah,
like the Oklahoma and shit, oh my God, Schmigadoon is for you. Like make it a point to see it because.
Do you watch Central Park? What? Do you watch Central Park on Apple Plus?
Yes.
Okay. I haven't started the new season. Yeah, I haven't started it, but one of the like selling points beyond the creators, I love. Everybody involved with the show was that it was a musical animated comedy. And I was like, how in the fuck do you pull that off? And I watched it and they pulled it off. I do enjoy a good musical where everything is a song. And it's just like, these aren't the words to a song anybody would ever write. Like, why are you singing them? You could just say them, but why not sing them? So yeah, anyway. Schmigadoon is on my list, so
okay. Yeah, it's gonna be a treat. Like, I'm honestly, it's gonna be a big treat for you, because especially, like I said, if you like Rodgers and Hammerstein, because they kind of subvert that. But the thing is that he has like this, like, he doesn't sing for the first couple of episodes, but the thing is that in the first three episodes, he's more interesting there doing nothing than he is here doing a shtick of this whole like egotistical or ego-driven like anxiety about things, right? And I don't know, it's just like, it could be like, and here's the thing of like, again, I'm giving a long leash to Levitan, because a lot of the characters in Modern Family started off as one notes and became so like Ed O'Neill's character, Jay, started off as a one note character, but became like him and Sofia Vergara's like relationship became so complex and so interesting. And their kids, Jesus Christ, their kids. Like, it's such a great, like, to watch that evolve.
Yeah, Luke like, especially was a one note, like, oh, this is the dumb kid. But like, by the time you get to like season three or four, it's not just that he's the dumb kid. It's that like how his dumbness kind of like informs other things.
Yes. You know? Well, it's like, okay, so we're going to talk about something about stupidity. In a little bit, or about characters that are stupid and how to write them properly. I mean, we've talked about this offline with like fucking the Coen brothers and how genius they are with writing stupid, right? Because it's an art to write accurate stupid, but also accurate and funny stupid. And
I think Levitan, like to your point, Levitan is good at that, because there is a character in this show that shows up for like maybe once per episode. It's like the PA dude.
Yes.
And like he has like one bit in every episode, but it's fucking perfect every single time. Like when they're all gonna walk out because they're gonna make the show what they don't want it to be, which was the classic style show. And the three or the four main actors are like, the kid's like, yeah, I got booted off my last movie. Keegan-Michael Key's like, yeah, I haven't worked in 2 years. And Judy Greer's like, yeah, I'm getting divorced and my life is falling apart. And Johnny Knoxville's like, yeah, my life's falling apart. And then the PA dude is like, gives them this whole story and they just turn around like, who are you? And this is not you, this is not the time. It's like, this is not your moment, dude. But it's so funny. Like,
yes,
that kid is really, really funny, and he just gets to walk into the scene, say something dumb, and then leave.
absolutely. And I hope, like I said, like ultimately my hope is that this is going to be something that we're going to see evolve and change, and ultimately have the richness. I hope that it has the richness of other ensemble comedies that really find their way. Like not everything can be a Michael Schur joint and instantly love it. Like, I mean, you know, it's like anytime I've ever seen a Michael Schur show, I instantly loved it. Like, it's like he's like the gold seal. And I'm not saying that Levitan isn't a gold seal. It's just sometimes things need to get up and running. Like, they're not as uniquely defined. Like Brooklyn Nine-Nine, like I give that as an example. That's a show that I instantly loved. I instantly loved the characters, but then started to watch them evolve and change and loved them even more. And I think that that's what I was hoping. Like, I always hope for, like, especially when I see creatives that I really love, I hope for the Michael Schur touch, you know?
Well, I mean, you say that, but like, did you watch Rutherford Falls?
Yes, I did.
Okay. See, for me, that wasn't an instant love. Like, I did not enjoy that show until probably about halfway through the first season. Unfortunately, it was recently canceled. And he sure did another show that I didn't immediately love. It's about like these people in, is it New York? Sunnyside. Did you watch Sunnyside? Okay. It was only on for one season. Cal Penn.
Yeah. I did not.
If you can find it, go back and watch it. It's one season.
I think it's on Peacock. I actually think it's on Peacock. Okay. I will. I mean, and then, but also, okay. So like, here's the thing. Like, I'm always thinking about, like, streaming versus network. And here's the thing is that so I've slowly started to work on Hacks from Michael Schur, but the first episode turned me off so much. That first episode is like, people are just fucking shitty. I was just like, fuck this. What the fuck is he doing? And it was like the whole, okay. So like, I have this theory about comedians and like creative comedians, like writers and shit. And I know that people are going to fucking probably hang me for this, but like, whenever they're given a, like, you know, there's this weird thing about, like, you know, making sure that, like, they have guidance to make sure that they don't go into, like, fucking stupid shit. And I felt like the first episode of Hacks was everything I hate when they're given all of the freedoms and they're given all of the yeses. And it's like, and furthermore, it's like, how do you make Gene Smart fucking unlikable? Like, truly unlikable, like shitty human being. I was like, what the fuck?
She just won an Emmy too for season 2. Yeah. So you gotta stick with it. I agree with you, man. I watched the first episode and I was like, this person is not nice. Like, you know, and not only that, but like the character, the intro to her world, like the character who's bringing you into that world, she's not really that likable either. Like, it's too very unlikable people. Like, but like, as the show goes on, like these two unlikable people kind of like cut each other's edges off, and you like get into their friendship. You know, it sounds weird to be saying like, oh, it's a show about two shitty people who become closer by being shitty together. But it's not necessarily that, but like, because their edges do get kind of smoothed as the episodes go on. I was fortunate that Spencer kept telling me about Hacks, and he also kept telling me about Barry, and I just watched Barry this past summer. Binge watched the whole show.
Like, okay, so you've seen the whole show. Oh shit. Okay, so can I ask just one thing side, like, fuck it, let's just kind of talk about this. Barry. So you got to see season 3, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Like, how on earth did this not win everything?
I don't know, man.
Because it is season 3.
Good. It's very dark, but it is so good.
And it gets darker as it goes on. That's the crazy part about this, is that it starts off like this. Oh yeah, we're gonna do this kind of like post Gross Point Blank kind of thing. But then there's like little spark, like little like embedded things. And then by the end of season 2, going into season 3, you're like, Jesus Christ, this is turning into a horror film, like a horror show, because it's like all of the anxiety you have for everything that happens.
And you know, everybody talks about him as Barry, which he's great. The whole cast is fantastic, but
yeah,
I think Steven Root is probably the most unsung like member of that cast, because like, holy shit, like we've known Steven Root is good. For decades now, but like it's just every time you get to see him in anything that isn't just like a bit or just like a scene, or like you see him like morph this character, and it, like, he's such a sleazebag, and then like you do kind of feel sorry for him, but then, you know, you're like, oh wait, no, he's a jerk. It's so good. Hacks was the opposite of that, where I wasn't immediately pulled in, like you're saying, the first. But I had the, much like Barry, had the benefit of stepping into it with 2 full seasons to binge. So instead of just watching the first episode and going like, I don't know, like I watched 3 or 4 episodes and then I was like, oh, okay, I see what's going on. Like, I see kind of how we start off with something, you know, somebody so unlikable, and how do we get into that? I had the exact same experience watching BoJack Horseman, where the first episode, I was just like, I do not want to watch a show about somebody who's so terrible. But then, like, by the end of season one, I'm like, this is the greatest show of all time. So,
yep. No, absolutely. And, like, I will say this much. Barry, I can't remember what's it's season three, but it's the episode, I think it's called 710N or 710 North, might be one of my favorite pieces of just visual, like it's not even TV, it's almost cinema. Like every year in Barry, there's for everybody who hasn't watched it, there's a Bill Hader directed episode. And I will tell you that every Bill Hader directed episode is so visually astute and so just kind of kick ass that, you know, it justifies everything that you've heard about him as a film geek, like how much he loves like geeky stuff. And like, if you've ever heard him on like podcasts talking about like film, like he's not just talking the talk, he's fucking walking the walk, like the little assassin. Or the, like, she's not even a little assassin, but like the you know which the episode, like he directed that. He directed 710 North.
I read an interview that said he hoped to direct every episode of the next season.
So yes, that's what they've said.
Which that gives seems me, a lot like a lot of work.
But also, it would not surprise me if Barry takes a second, takes a back seat.
Yeah.
And all of the other characters come forward because it's that kind of show. It's that kind of wild ass show that you can do work. That with.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, all of those, any like solo or more focused episode on any other character is as fascinating, or maybe even more so than when it's more about Barry, because all of those characters are so interesting, man.
Yes,
they've done such a good job of writing that show. I mean, we got off talking about Reboot, but I think Reboot, I hope that it comes around for you. I mean, if it doesn't, it doesn't. Not, you know, everything's not for everybody, but I'm in on it. Just I'm very into metatextual things, like things that are like commenting on themselves.
Yeah.
So it's like I'm into it right now. Hopefully it doesn't lose me. If it gets to be too much about like Keegan Michael Key, it might lose me, because he is I'm least interested in that character. He seems very the Paul Reiser stuff is, I loved. I loved every bit of, like, how out of touch and shitty and just, like finding out the whole daughter angle and, like, and capping it with the popcorn gag. Like,
yes.
You know, it starts off with the whole, like, we're not doing this whole popcorn in the dryer thing. And he insists it's such a funny bit. And then just to have it end with her filling his car full of popcorn.
Yep.
okay. So, two other shows we're going to talk about. One you didn't watch. I'll briefly talk about. I binged all of the latest season of Cobra Kai. There seem to be two types of people in the world now: Cobra Kai people and not Cobra Kai people.
Okay, and let me just say this up front. It's not that I haven't. It's just the first three episodes I watched, I was like, okay, this is what it's going to be. This is what everybody's telling me it is.
It is stupid and goofy. And I mean, it really is not an intelligent show. Like they treat the karate as if it's like the thing that's going to, It as if they're Avengers and they're saving the world from Thanos. Like that's the way they treat it. And that part, I admit every time it comes up, especially Ralph Macchio, like he might, it's weird that he is probably the worst actor on that show. William Zabka, man, is fucking killing it. Like, he knows who that character is, and he is playing it, buddy. Like, down to the like, the inappropriate, like, anything. This season opens with him having to go to Mexico to, you've seen the first few episodes, so that kid that lives in his apartment building winds up going to Mexico to try to find his real dad, and William Zabka chases him down there to try to bring him back, and most of the jokes, very obvious, but it still cracks me up every time, is him trying to communicate to people in, like, by yelling at them loudly as if they would understand his English better if he just yells at them.
And, like,
it is, he knows who that character is, and he plays every bit of it. Meanwhile, Ralph Macchio is just not, he's just not very good. If they wrote him and his wife off the show, it would be fine with me. The kids are all fun, and they're all having a good time. And I'm weirdly into the drama of, like, so season one was all about Ralph Macchio and Zabka and, like, their old rivalry. And then they bring back Kreese, who is the head of the dojo. And then, like, he comes in and he boots out Zabka. And, like, then it becomes, like, a three-headed little, like a triangle of fighting each other. Like, you have Johnny and his, like, kids that he's teaching, Kreese and the kids that he's teaching in Cobra Kai, and then Ralph Macchio and the kids that he's teaching. Like, they all kind of, like, are facing off against each other. Eventually they bring back Terry Silver, which is the kid from the skinny, the dark haired dude from the third one.
Ian Thomas Nicholas.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like, oh yeah, this dude's a psychopathic asshole. I'm pulled in by all of this, like, bringing all this stuff back in. But I also completely recognize how stupid the show is and how somebody could watch it and go, yeah, I see what all this is, and it's dumb, and I'm just not going to waste my time on it. That's why I say no judgment. There does seem to be two schools of people in the world now, Cobra Kai people and not Cobra Kai people. Like, you're either in for the dumbness, or you're just like, I don't have time to watch a show that's so stupid.
No, because
it's dumb.
Absolutely.
It's 100% dumb.
But you saying that to me, like, makes me understand the kind of tone, and it makes me go, oh, okay, well, I'm gonna give it a second shot. Like, it's not that I didn't fall in love with it or anything. It's just that there's so much content out there. Like, we know there's so much fucking content. And, like, you know, like, when I find something special, like, it's usually after the first season. Like, I didn't find Abbott Elementary until all of the episodes were on Hulu. And I'd started, actually, I heard Quinta Brunson talking on the YouTube show that LeBron James has, and talking about her show and how hard it was to develop and all of this stuff. And, like, I was like, you know what? We should fucking watch this. And then watching it and then realizing how good it is.
And so two, I can't remember their names. Harley Quinn. We talk a lot about Harley Quinn. Two of the Harley Quinn showrunners were instrumental in helping her bring that show to life. Let's see. Trying to find their names. Justin Tan, and I don't remember who the other one is. These two dudes left this season of Harley Quinn was their last season as being, like, producer, writer, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
to fully like help with this show, because I, so you're talking about Brunson. We're talking about people that are writer, director, you know, like Bill Hader.
Yeah.
She's in the writer's room. She's the star of the show. Like, she's the creator of the show. She is everything in this show. And so having to split all your time with all of that, like, you know, having other people there to help show run is probably beneficial to her. So it's interesting. And also talking about streaming and those no boundaries versus going to network with boundaries. Like, these two dudes helped write and produce and create Harley Quinn, a show that definitely could not really air on network television. And no. Abbott Elementary, which is a very Modern Family-esque, like, you know, there's some, you know, a little bit of toe in the line, but there's nothing in that show that's like way over the line. So anyway, yeah. Did you watch the season premiere of Abbott?
I know we're watching it tonight. It's going to be a part of our stream stuff. I've heard about it, and I've seen enough previews to go, oh shit, this is going to be fun. Like, yeah. like what I just like, for anybody that hasn't watched Abbott Elementary, what I want to like imbue to you is that it's a show much like Parks and Rec, that takes a concept that you don't know is going to work, and it soars with it within the first 2 to 3 episodes. Like, and this is a show that I feel like could only be produced the way that it is, in the pitch and tone and how perfect it is, on network TV, because a streamer would fucking ruin it, because they would want to not be in the school all the time, and they would want to have like cursing, and they would want to have like the over the line shit, where that doesn't work for Abbott. Like, what works for Abbott is that they maintain that kind of PG-13 of it all. And because of that, the tone that they strike is fucking perfect. Like, other than Ghosts on CBS, it's favorite show.
I've heard so much about Ghosts. I've got to catch
it. Oh, dude, it's on Paramount Plus.
Yeah.
It's an entire season. It's 18 episodes. And I will guarantee you will be delighted and laugh like there's nobody's business. I mean, it's just, it's a great, like, Ghosts is a truly wonderful show that I don't know how many people are watching.
Not enough. Everybody I know that watches it says how wonderful it is. But then I've only heard that from, like, you and, like, 4 other people. So... It clearly not enough people are watching it.
No, they're definitely not. But I feel like that's a show that's going to grow. Like, that's, it's going to be like Abbott. Like, Abbott's going to be huge this year. Abbott is already huge. But I think it's going to take on an epic level where everybody's going to be talking about it. And like, my favorite part about Abbott and Ghosts is that it's done out of a true, like, creative need to make something different and special, like, and try to go aim for something special, and they succeed. It's like, oftentimes we're always talking about, like, you know, shit that doesn't work, but and this so works.
Abbott can come along at, like, at really the perfect time, like, that, especially during COVID, there was a lot of, like, and there has been for most of our lives, this backlash against teachers, and not that there aren't bad teachers out there, but, like, God, man, like, I know, one of my nieces is a teacher. Like, I know the shit that they have to put up with. And it is not an easy job. It's pretty thankless. And, like, I'm sorry, they just do not get paid enough. So to have a show, like, shining a light on it in a comedic fashion, like, the premiere deals pretty heavily with, like, what the expectation is of teachers versus what they're actually able to accomplish, both, like, with the finances they have and just with their time. Like, it very specifically, like, makes a comment on all of that.
Oh, and, that's
and it,
nice.
it's it's sweet and funny and, you know, also kind of sad all at the same time. How did we get to talking about Abbott?
Because we were talking about reboot, and we were just talking about, like, just in general, like TV shows that we love, and we were, I think that we were
about Cobra Kai and how the Cobra Kai people and that. Anyway, yeah. So, if you like Cobra Kai, like, of course, I'm sure you've already seen the new season, so it doesn't matter. I don't know that, like, you know, I don't know if you watch the first few episodes, like, maybe if you get through the first season, you might be like, okay, I'm in. But I also don't know, like, I will say the show does not get better. Like, it just keeps doubling down on the things that it does. Like,
that's, you know,
it's not a show like The Office and Parks and Rec, where you're like, there's something there in the first season, and then by the time you get to the second season, you're just like, man, this show's fucking brilliant. Both of those shows did that. Cobra Kai is not one of those shows. Like, what is in the first episode, what's in the first season, is still in every other season. They just keep doubling down on all of it. So it either works for you or it doesn't. And if it doesn't, that's fine. So, all right. So we talked about network TV, and the only shows we're talking about are on streaming. So another 3-episode premiere, Andor, 90 minutes of Star Wars from Tony Gilroy. People are losing their fucking minds over this show. And we, weirdly enough, have not even texted about it. I texted with Spencer about it, and he still hasn't watched it. I recorded with my cousin Jacob last night, actually, discussing the premiere, which that'll be up on the website later today. Well, if you're hearing this, it's already up on the website.
go listen to it.
or maybe not, depending on how much you enjoyed Andor. I'm just going to get my hot take out of the way and then let you run with it, because I feel like we're going to have very different takes. I think the show is full of great actors. The dialogue is fantastic. It looks better than any of the other Star Wars shows, probably because it wasn't shot in the volume. I know Kenobi wasn't shot in the volume either, for the most part, but... And I think the direction, everything about it is great, except I was so fucking bored watching this show. I can't even. I did not care about this story one iota, man. Like, I rewatched the first episode twice, and I get it. Like, I know what they're going for, but I just did not care. I was bored. And I know that that is not the take that almost everybody else has. And so I've just quietly, like, been like, not really going to talk about it unless somebody asks me about it. Because, holy shit, like, I do not want to get raked over the coals for not hating it. I enjoyed it just fine. I was just bored. Like, none of the plot interested me whatsoever. So what did you think?
I loved it. Like, I had a really strong pull towards it. And part of it was, I think a lot of it is going to depend on people's take on what Tony Gilroy is doing. I mean, he basically Michael Clayton and Jason Bourne Star Wars, right? He's bending it to the point of breaking it for certain people. So, like, you being bored is like the breaking thing. It's like it's more Michael Clayton than it is like Star Wars at this point, because he's moving the chess pieces, he's giving us what we don't normally like. It's weird because, like, watching it, it's like, this is, if this was not Andor, this would be like a Netflix series
I would have not watched past the first episode. If it was not Star Wars, I would have been like, oh god, this is going to be a show about, we we said spoilers, but spoilers if you didn't watch Andor. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a show about a dude who killed one person accidentally, intentionally killed another, and then now he's on the run, and it's going to be all about how his life just fell apart. And, like, yeah, I can see where it's going. That's great. That's exactly how I felt, except I'm sitting there going, like, this is Star Wars. I should be having more, a bigger reaction. I didn't love parts of Kenobi. I didn't love the Book of Boba Fett, but I had feelings about those, none of which were like, ugh. Like, I was never.
You see, now you know how I felt about Kenobi. Like, yeah. That's exactly how I felt about Kenobi, because it didn't connect, and that was so fucking disappointing for me. So disappointing that Kenobi did not connect for me, except for in certain moments. But here it connects, because I like what they're doing. Like, it's bending, but not breaking for me. Here's the other thing, is that we're seeing a lot of stuff that we, like, what I was hoping for in the Star Wars universe when it went to streaming, when it went to Disney Plus, when it bought by Disney and they told us we were going to get all the Star Wars, was that eventually we would get to the point to where we were going to see shit that we had not seen in Star Wars. And the thing is that everything that's happened up until Andor, we have seen in Star Wars. It's just, you have to look for it. Like, everything. And this is where I feel like, okay, so, like, everything that we've seen in live action has been done by Dave Filoni in the animated series. So yep. There's this level of comfort there that I'm okay with. Like, and the thing is that what I want is, I want to see things that I don't normally see in Star Wars that I've seen for the last 50 years now. Jesus, that's saying a lot. Andor gives me that because it's showing me stuff. Okay, so, like, here's the weird thing that no one's talking about that I'm like, okay, Tony Gilroy actually, Kathy Kennedy allowed Tony Gilroy to do this. And then it had to pass through both Filoni and Favreau to get to this point, which is that we finally see, like, it's a weird, like, we see a post-coital scene, which I was not expecting. And yeah. It's so weird because, like, Star Wars is so non-sexualized, even though it's romanticized. It's a big difference, guys, between sexual politics and romantic politics.
Yeah, lots of romance going on in Star Wars. Not really ever any sex.
No sex, no... how can I put it? Not necessarily a, like... Like, okay, so, like, this is a spy show. So, like, spies, like, you know, and, like spies deal, or people that deal in espionage deal with all manner of kinds of, like, you know, like, that kind of stuff, including sexual, political violence. And I was not expecting to see that component. That and corporate politics put into a Star Wars TV series. Like, the thing that I found shocking was that we've not seen any Imperial officers. Everything is through a security force. And it's kind of interesting.
I like that. I like the security force, like, that whole aspect. I was actually interested in that storyline and, like, that dude kind of, like, pushing his orders aside and going, like, no, like, it felt very, like, the whole copaganda thing is like big right now in shows that glorify police officers, and instead of showing, like, the realness of it. And this felt like a version of that, except not glorifying the officer. Like, this dude is trying to just do his job. He was told not to do his job, but, like, two people were killed. Like, it's a very a thin, let's call it a thin gray line, instead of a blue line. and watching that aspect of it, I was enjoying, like, the kind of procedural-esque thing. I can appreciate how basic it is and how we don't see enough of the, like, basic story in Star Wars. Everything is so big and galaxy altering. And I'm the same person watching She-Hulk every week, loving it because it's not, yes, not that big story. It is just like a very small scale story. But it's also fun. That maybe that's part of it too. Like, this show's bleak as fuck, man.
Oh,
like,
yeah. It started bleak.
There is no good time in this show with anybody. Like, in three episodes, I don't think anybody smiles. So,
no, you know, they don't.
I will say this. Like, I keep for all its faults, Star Wars, with every new thing that they usher down the pipeline, I do keep getting a new favorite droid. Like, and
oh my goodness,
once again,
yes,
I now have a new favorite droid. It is such a, like, this droid is so endearing. Like, it is the anti K2SO, like, where, yes, K2 was like such a sarcastic, like, just it was fun in a not mean, I don't want to say mean, but fun in that, like, sarcastic way. And this, yes, droid is just so, like, I don't know. I just immediately felt for him. Like, you know, I that was my favorite part of the show, was the droid. So,
I will say this much. I literally opened up my phone when I instantly heard, I heard the droid, whose call sign is B2EMO or B2EMO, which is kind of a hilarious kind of thing, because I literally thought it was,
it's kind of an emo droid.
Yeah, it is. But when I heard his voice and the empathy that just came out, like the softness and the tone, I thought it was Bill Irwin. I literally was like, yeah, oh, this has to be Bill Irwin. And I, like, went onto my thing, and it wasn't. It was actually the puppeteer they left his voice in, Dave Chapman.
Yeah.
Yes. But I literally could have sworn it was Bill Irwin, who I, you know, shout out to Bill Irwin, who I just love and adore. But, yeah, it's kind of great. Like the whole aspect of, can you lie? I need more power to lie. It's kind of amazing. Because it's all protocol stuff, and it's just like little minutia. I really did like it because of the, I know it sounds weird, but because of the navel gazing, I didn't mind it so much, because you're telling a story about an immigrant without a home anymore, that's being pushed around by not only corporations, but a government that they didn't elect. And it's supposed to be a little dour, right? And I think that we're going to get to the high adventure stuff. And I think that we're gonna get to possibly Andor having a little bit more fun, but I think that we have to, and I'm glad that they did three episodes to give you an arc to a point
me,
to where,
me too.
Oh,
I was pretty pissed when they were like, we're doing a three episode premiere. I'm like, there's 12 episodes. You're burning off three of them all at once. But then when I watched them, I was like, oh, this actually should not have been announced as a three episode premiere. I understand why. Really, it's a 90-minute movie, like, it, because you need those three episodes. If I had just watched the first episode and had to wait a week, I would have been like, what? What?
Yeah.
Like, nothing, like, something does happen, but really not much happens in the first episode. But, yeah.
It's more set up. It's a lot more set up. And I am digging what Tony Gilroy has been given out. And here's the thing, is that I feel like seeing the directors that are coming through, I feel like they're going to be three episode quintets or one-offs, because the next three episodes are directed by one of my favorite directors working right now, Susanna White, who specializes in this kind of low level grounded spy craft. She actually, so if people may know her from like things like Jane Eyre, but like I know her from Boardwalk Empire, Billions, and there's another show called Trust. She's done these shows that like deal with like different kinds of intrigue. She's a very kind of great director about that, and TV. So she's got three episodes that she's working on, and I'm interested, intrigued, because it's also written by Dan Gilroy, like Tony's brother. So like they keep on shifting writers. And if you look at the things, you can kind of see a plan almost here. It's almost like you're getting a series or mini arcs with creatives, because Toby Haynes directed this three episode arc, which ends perfectly. Like, I mean, if you really think about it, he like him going off into space, leaving on Andor, is kind of like this perfect kind of rumination of what we've been getting to, right? So I'm wondering if the next three episodes are going to be kind of like that, except for we're not going to get them all right away. We're getting them week to week. It's one of those things where I completely understand why somebody would not like this, because it's a lot of navel gazing. And if the navel gazing isn't for something, and it's just spinning its wheels for three episodes, fuck, it's like, you know, I don't want another Book of Boba Fett. I don't want another Kenobi. I need this one to connect, right? Because Book of Boba Fett, the problem for me is that, and I think that they realized it, because we didn't talk about this, Boba Fett is not a character you can hang a story off of, because
it turns out that, yeah, he really isn't.
Like, you try to make him Lawrence of Arabia with the Sand People, and I appreciate that, but it doesn't fucking work. Yeah. So much so that I think that the creatives understood, and they're like, oh, you know what? Maybe we should give them Mando season 2.5, and like literally gave us like a four episode arc where Mando came in and took over, which, like, I'm not gonna be mad at that. I mean, I'm not going to be mad at that, because it gets us away from all of the, like, you know, it gets like four episodes that we don't need to have that build up in Mando, that we can just instantly go into Mando season three and hit the ground running, because this whole like kerfuffle with Luke is gone. Like, you know, he chooses man, like, you know, Grogu chooses. Oh, sorry, spoilers for, like, we told you nerds ruin everything. So if you haven't watched Book of Boba, I'm sorry, but Grogu chooses Mando, right? And so there's that. But for the most part, yeah, I mean, Boba was like, I was like, I appreciate it, because I love Temuera Morrison. Like, he's fucking great. But, and I mean, seeing the Rancor, him riding the Rancor, is something that is truly joyous.
Yeah, there's a lot of really cool moments in Book of Boba Fett, but as a whole, it just didn't work, because like you said, Boba Fett's not a character. Like, he is the character that shows up. He's not the character that's the focus. Like, when he shows up in Mandalorian, like, it's fun. Like, it's you know, it's a good time. But then the whole show being about him, like, it just becomes like it's too much. I do think Andor will get me. I think I will get there. I wouldn't say I'm worried, where I'm like, I'm worried that I'm just not going to find anything to like in the show. I'm more just like, I'm going to need a lot of time with this show, because I have full faith in everything that they're doing with it. Tony Gilroy, I mean, I would love to know how much he, like, came in and, quote, rescued Rogue One. I know that there's enough of the movie there that he doesn't get the credit for directing it. But we also know that they made massive changes in the, what, 3, 4, or 5 months before it premiered. And lots of story changes, maybe not the main beats, but like, so I say that I fully expect to end this series having loved it, because Rogue One is a movie that like, I haven't revisited it in a while, but it is the one Star Wars movie that I've continued to really just appreciate of the Disney era. Whereas the rest of them, Rian Johnson's Last Jedi included, I love The Last Jedi, but it is not held up for me the way like Rogue One has. Solo, I've always maintained just kind of like, no, Solo's fine, but
it is.
You know, it's fun. That is the thing about Solo. Solo's, I think I brought this up when Jacob and I were talking. From a plot standpoint, Solo is a movie that I look at and go, nobody fucking needs this. Like, we don't need any of this. Like, I don't care about this story. I do not care about this story. I do care about the characters, and I am having a lot of fun with them. Like, you know, Lando was a lot of fun in that movie. You know, and that's what holds me for Solo. That's why I'm like, yeah, don't give a shit about the story. Like, it is so unnecessary to all of Star Wars. And I don't want to say that about Andor, but I understand why it's like you're seeing a character story. And so it's a little bit different from what we're used to with Star Wars, where everything is just driving the overall narrative and nothing's like truly drilled down character focused. So I could just be having a tough time with that transition. So,
which, I mean, you know, there's no rhyme or reason for these shows. Like, it's not like MCU where there's this pattern and there's this curation there. And the thing is that, like, for me, ultimately, what it comes down to is that, are you, like, is it enough Star Wars there? And, like, the thing is that visually it's enough Star Wars. And here's the reason why, is that this is the only show that's filmed at Pinewood in London. Yeah. And so the look, the craftsmanship, the light is different than in LA. And this feels like Star Wars. This feels like the Star Wars that I'm used to. The color palette, the way that the sets are like, I know that sounds weird to people, but if you watch the other shows, you can tell that it's just 1 or 2% off from the movies. I'm not saying that they're not great, but visually there's something going on, and it's the natural nature of just a production. And when you shift from London to LA, everything changes. Even if you imitate it, it's not the original. It's a copy of a copy. And as we know, the multiplicity thing, we know what happens. And I'm not saying that it's as bad as that. I'm just saying that it's by degrees. So, like, visually, this film connects in a way to the movies, and specifically to Rogue One, in a way that I don't feel like Mando and Book of Boba, and even, I hate saying this, Obi-Wan Kenobi connect, because they're all filmed in LA.
Yeah.
And they all have LA sunlight, and they all have LA craftsmanship. So that 2% or 3% like shift in that, even if they're copying it perfectly, it just changes.
I agree.
Yeah. And I mean, it's something as simple as the speeder bike shot with Stellan Skarsgård and Diego Luna on the speeder bike. Even that looked more to me like Star Wars than anything I'd seen before, even though it was two characters, like one character I don't even know, a speeder bike that I've never seen before. It just felt like Star Wars to me, as opposed to what I've seen in the other shows where it's like Mando's riding a classic speeder bike. I should be like, oh yeah, well, this feels like it.
It has a lot to do with the practical effects of it too.
Exactly. No, 100%.
There's a sequence in the third episode where they're like trying to siege the town, And like that, that one dude like freaks out, gets on the ship and tries to like take off.
Yes. And,
like, it is so good. It's so inconsequential, but it is so good. And those are the things that Tony Gilroy, I feel like, does really, really well.
Yes.
Maybe I am 100% struggling with the, like, being invested in the story and the characters beyond Diego Luna. Because all of it's brand new. Like, he's yes. the only person that we know. So
far.
Yeah. And so I'm struggling there, but like, you know, if you go to Gilroy's, like you're talking about Michael Clayton, not a movie. I saw it once. And so it wasn't something, I know a lot of people love that movie and that's great. The things that I remember about that movie are those kinds of beats.
Yes.
Like trailer moments, really. It's the stuff they show you in the trailer. Like, in Clayton, there's that one, I guess you could call it explosive scene.
Yeah, the horse. So,
yeah.
The hands of the horse and then the explosion.
Yeah. Like, that's what I remember about that movie and, like, how well that's, like, shot and timed and, like, you know, it's like, man, that's really, really impressive. And I know it's not Gilroy directing here, but, like, his fingerprints are, like, all over this damn thing. That feels like a Tony Gilroy thing. Like, that whole, like, seeing that dude escape. We saw it in Rogue One. Like, almost every character that died, like, those are the moments, you know, that those build-ups to things. And, like, you know, I really, really enjoy all that. I think it's well crafted. I just wish I cared more. And I feel like going forward, I will, because so it ends with him meeting Stellan Skarsgård. They get on the bike, they escape, and we understand that this is him heading for bigger things. This is how he becomes part of the rebellion, like all of that. And so I think going forward, I will be fully on board because, you know, that's where I'm going to really connect with it because it's something that I'm familiar with. We're going to see Mon Mothma. We're going to see who else is coming
back? K2SO.
Yeah,
K2SO is coming back.
Saul. We're going to see him. I hope we see a lot of like bits and pieces of other pieces of the rebellion. But I think that's where I'm really going to become invested in the show. Much like I said, I didn't need to know how Han Solo kind of like where he started and getting off that planet. Like I didn't enjoy it. So I didn't hate it. I was just mostly bored by it. So, you know, don't set me on fire. If you listen to this and you loved it, I was so excited for it, man. Every single person that saw it early was like, holy shit, this is what Star Wars should be. This is, you know, I'm like, I was so excited. And then that first episode, I was like, he's looking for his sister. Okay. This is so boring.
Which I find funny. Like, I find funny that they used that. But I also know that, like, they're using it to humanize him. They're using it to, like kind of give us an entry point. I mean, we know the end of the story. What it is. Yeah. Like, I mean, like, we've seen this before, right? But at the end of the day, I'm interested. I'm very, very interested, and I can't, like, the next 8 weeks are going to be a lot of fun seeing this. And I feel like in a couple of weeks, we're going to be talking about something that you actually will love. I think Tales of the Jedi, I think, is going to be something like that will be an instant love because, I mean, even for me, it's going to be an instant love because, I mean, Filoni coming back to animation and specifically something that I think we both loved, which is the Clone Wars era or pre-Clone Wars, is even better because, like, we're getting, like, I mean, again, it's his whole, I think it's his whole mission to fill out this stuff with all of the stories that he ever came up with during the Clone Wars. Yes. And so, like, these extra shows are just filler. And they're not filler, but they're filler in the best way. They're like the appendices for Lord of the Rings fans.
Yep.
You know, or even House of the Dragon fans. Like, they're getting, we're getting ephemera that I can totally get behind. And, like, you know, for Star Wars fans, what a time to be alive. We're finally starting to get some push, like, to, like, now that we have these three shows, we're going to see more, and then there's just more coming out. I mean, like, three live action shows, but we have two other ones that are being developed right now that are going to be released fairly soon. And then all this animated stuff. I mean, Jesus,
I'm glad they've taken a step back and gone, you know what? Like, we cannot keep dumping this stuff on top of each other
because
we're kind of, you know, we need to always have something new-ish on the site to keep people talking, keep people coming back. But, like, the original plan was to have Andor and Bad Batch running at the same time. And, you know, while part of me is like, yes, give me all the Star Wars, like, the other part of me is like, much like, I said I was pissed they were burning off three episodes. I understand why now, but let's space this stuff out. And, you know, Solo paid the price for Disney's, like, give them all the Star Wars, you know. If Solo had come out a year after Last Jedi, people probably would have enjoyed that movie rather than, like, man, we just saw Star Wars 3 months ago. Like, there's another.
But I also I guarantee you, if they gave it a year, somebody like Tony Gilroy would have come into Star Wars again over Ron Howard and fixed and further tinkered with it because, you know, we talk about Rogue One being a film that, like, you know, the original iteration we'd love to see. I would love to see what Lord and Miller did with Solo that pissed off Kathy Kennedy so much that they
reshot most of the movie.
They reshot 100% of the movie, from what I understood. Like, they literally, like, why, like, it's the contact, like, it's the line from Contact. Why build two?
Or why make one when you can make two at twice the price?
The cost. Exactly. Yeah. I'm like, just from a filmmaker's perspective, and I know why it will never come out, neither one of these, because we know how fandom is. Fandom will get behind Lord and Miller and go, this is the brilliant thing that we needed. Why the fuck didn't you give it to us? Because we've seen it with the fucking Snyder Cut. Like, it wasn't, like, we all knew when his 4-hour Justice League slog came out that was not going to be the end of the Snyder Bros. That was the beginning of the Snyder Bros, because then all of a sudden they started doing release the air cut. No, guys, that fucking movie sucks. And I don't know how David Ayer would make his cut, like, would make it better.
Don't know how anything could have made that movie better other than, like, completely other than maybe bringing in James Gunn to completely remake it and turn it into something completely different. I don't know how that movie was going to be any good ever.
absolutely not. But, like, I'm always curious about this because we've heard that it was so different. Both movies were so different. Within their iterations with their stuff. But Solo, I don't mind Solo. Solo's like a fun movie. It's like it should have been a TV series, let's be honest. And I will not be surprised. I will not be surprised if everybody from Solo shows up in a different iteration in some kind of streaming series. Like, I mean, if you think that
they said that they're just waiting on Donald Glover because they want to do a Lando series, and his schedule has been so ridiculous. Like, you know, we're talking about those people who do too much. Donald Glover is one of those people. Like, Atlanta has been his baby, and like, he is in every aspect of that show, writing it, directing it, producing it. Music, like, there's not a piece of that show that he doesn't editing it. He touches every piece of that show. And on top of his music career, like, he's just not had time to go film a Star Wars show. So Lando, I mean, unless Donald Glover just decides he doesn't want to do it, Lando's coming. It just might be 2 or 3 years. And I'm with you. I got to feel like almost all those people will be back, you know. I don't think they burned really any bridges. I think they're much like the cast of the sequel trilogy. The problem isn't with except maybe John Boyega. He seems to not have been truly, truly happy with the decisions made for the third movie, which I don't blame him. Mm-hmm. But it's not a problem between the talent and the creatives. It's more a problem between the talent and the toxic fandom that they don't want to dive back into, which I don't blame them there. You know, like, if Ewan and Hayden Christensen had been like, I don't know, man, like, we dealt with so much backlash and so much bullshit over those movies, I just don't want to come back, then, I mean, I would have understood. You know, but thankfully they didn't. So hopefully, like, we're going to see that in a couple of years. The cast of Solo kind of getting what it took a few decades for the cast of the prequel trilogy to to really see, is that, like, yeah, the problem is the toxic people are really vocal. That's the problem.
Yeah, no, it really is. And yeah, ultimately, like, I don't have a problem with it. I kind of enjoy it. I kind of like the goofiness of it and the fact that it's a heist film. But we'll see what happens. Like, I honestly think that, like, you know, it would be nice to see, like, we already know Donald Glover is, like, fully formed as Lando. He is Lando, and Lando is him. But to see, like, Alden Ehrenreich to get a second chance, but also get something that feels less dictated by plot and more just allowed to be charming.
Yeah.
That would be really nice. That would be really nice. I think that people would change their minds about his Han Solo. I'm not saying it's perfect, but hell, like, some of the people that have been casted in Star Wars, initially you're just like, huh, what? Yeah. And then they turn out, like, you know, given the chance, given the leeway, they turn out to be great additions. So I'm definitely, I'm always all in for Star Wars, but especially for, like, ultimately for Andor, I'm definitely on. I'm definitely, like, this is me. This is.
I mean, I'm in. I'm if it's Star Wars, I'm there. Like, I watch everything. Well, I still haven't watched Star Wars Visions, but it's on my list. To it eventually. So yeah, I mean, I'm in. I'm just looking for I'm probably gonna rewatch the, because I already rewatched the first one, but I'm gonna rewatch the second and third episode and try to get more into it and try to dig in and but I think going forward I'll definitely feel better about the show. Because it's going to be more invested, like I said, in things that I am, you know, invested and interested in, rather than, you know, his kind of origin story, which I can appreciate. I was like, oh, is this what this is going to be? Okay. So, anyway, I guess that's well, a little over our 2 hours, but yeah, Andor, Adam loved it. I was okay with it. If you want to hear me talk more about Andor, you can go over to xwingfiles.com and just check out the regular X-Wing Files podcast. Jacob and I kind of spend an hour. He felt very similarly. So I felt a little better when I was like, what did you think? He was like, I was kind of bored. And I was like, oh, thank God. Like, I was like, there is something wrong with me. I'm not loving this show. But if you want to hear us not praise the show, you can go check that out. There's tons of stuff on the site right now. Adam and I, of course, doing this. Jacob and I are talking about Star Wars. Elizabeth and I are talking about House of the Dragon. Then we've got me and my friends Mina and Tim are talking about She-Hulk on the Marvel Fanfare podcast. So lots of stuff going on there. And so go check out the site. Go rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. And I've been a little active on Twitter. So I will say, if you want to follow me on Twitter, it's at Deadpool 1979, D-E-D-P-O-O-L 1979. And I'll let Adam plug his stuff.
Yeah, so on the site, on my site, the Movie Isle, it's where you can see the work, can see Logan's written work and my written work. This week I will be posting stuff about Fantastic Fest, and then also Logan's next iteration of the moving pictures. It didn't get posted this week because I literally thought I was going to be going to Fantastic Fest and covering stuff instantly. So that got all screwed up. So it will be posting next Friday. And I guarantee you will want to read this one because it's about a cult favorite sequel. And it stars Bill Paxton, but it's not Aliens. And I will just leave you with that. And we'll probably end up talking about it because I've watched this film twice since, like, you know, editing and sprucing it up and, like, you know, like our collab with it. I've watched it twice and I, like, wholeheartedly agree with Logan's summation of the movie. So you'll have to check in next week about that. And then, yeah, I mean, I've got some new reviews coming up, and then of course Fantastic Fest coverage, which we will probably more than likely talking about next week.
All right, sounds good, man. We will be back in, you know, 5 or 6 or 7, 8 days. I don't know. Whenever we'll record in a week, it's just a matter of when I get around to editing and posting.
Exactly.
Sometimes it's the next day, and sometimes it's 3 days later. So we'll see you guys then.
See you guys then.